Welcome to the Auto Fire Power Hour. Ray.
Brian.
Oh, boy. We are having just a banger of a Saturday morning, I do have to say.
Yeah.
Let's briefly address the people on that. So I did some editing, and we had recorded, just schedule-wise, we had recorded on a Saturday morning or Sunday morning or whatever it was.
Yep.
And I was in here. I was jacked up on my cotton candy-flavored energy drink. You were all jacked up on coffee.
Yep.
And, you know, we put out in my opinion, I don't often toot my own horn, but
yeah, right.
But toot toot. that was a great episode, I feel. And
yeah.
I feel a good reason as to why it was a good episode is that we did this bright and early on a weekend morning versus at the end of a fucking work week where you're zapped. Well, you're zapped. I'm not. I live a very blessed and casual lifestyle.
Yeah, I'm beat by
The shit is kicked out of you, and rightfully so. You're a hardworking dude, and you deserve your fucking respect in that category. But we're gonna try this out, and I'm eager. I'm asking for feedback out there. I want to know, and I'm not saying, hey, come and tell us that our old shit fucking sucked, you assholes. But I just want to know. Like, I feel like we have a lot more energy in these
more pep
morning
to
runs,
our step.
More pep to our step. So that's what we're gonna be working on from here on out into the future, and. I just want to know.
It's just part of the sacrifice we make to deliver quality content.
Yeah, exactly.
To the listener.
We are now cutting into our weekends, you assholes. So show us some fucking dignity and respect.
And you can do that by visiting our Patreon.
Yeah, you go to fucking patreon.com/autofirepowerhour. There's some things there that you can look at. It's a lonely little website, I got to say. It's a lonely, sad little website. It's cool. They can't if they... Ray... They can if they feel like it. If not, we're going to continue forward, and we're going to appreciate all the listeners that we have. So we're going to do this deal. We're going to be talking about fucking 3DO.
Yeah.
And the last episode that we did, we talked about EA, and we talked a fair amount about Trip Hawkins.
Yep.
Who is responsible for the 3DO.
Yeah. He left EA to go start 3DO.
Right.
And one of the reasons why is at this time frame, 3D graphics were starting to become... possible.
Yeah, and 3DO is like really one of the torchbearers of the whole fucking thing.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think we're
only to flame out.
Oh,
it's kind of like he was like in the palace, you know, lighting mm-hmm. his torch, ready to like run out and carry it,
yep.
you know, to like, you know, to whatever.
To slay the beast.
Yes.
Yeah.
And like immediately runs out of the palace and it starts raining.
Yeah, he's like, "Oh, shit ass."
That's 3DO. Yeah.
Yes, it is. It's a fucking flame extinguished by natural events.
Yes.
That's exactly what it is.
I didn't realize how good that analogy
yeah.
was
no,
until
pretty,
you laid it
it's
out.
It's pretty spot on.
Yeah.
So yeah, 3DO is 1993, and that's where I think it's like, that's the coolest thing about the 3DO, is that like, it looks the way that it does, and it's fucking 1993. Like, you have to remember, 1993, there's still NES games coming out.
Yeah.
Albeit like not in by droves or anything. Clearly, the Genesis and the Super Nintendo are like the kings. The Neo Geo exists, but like only fucking Ricky Schroeder on Silver Spoons owns it.
Right.
And even that thing obviously doesn't do 3D graphics. So it's yep. like, you know, here's this $700 fucking dollar electronic wonder device, which,
yeah.
which by the way...
Is this the most expensive mainstream console to be released?
Yeah, and even if you consider the Neo Geo expensive, or, I mean, well, obviously you do that, but if you consider Neo Geo mainstream, the 3DO is even more expensive at launch than the Neo Geo was.
Yeah.
Neo Geo is $600 at launch, and the 3DO is fucking $700.
Yeah, that's insane.
Also, it's very important to mention that now that, in hindsight, with like knowing what the 3DO became, and like it is the butt of a lot of jokes, it's like, you know, if fucking... I'm going to make a really obscure wrestling reference just because I fucking want to. But if the Atari Jaguar and the 3DO were a tag team, they'd be the Mulkey Brothers. And the two of you out there listening who understand what that is, you're laughing. Maybe. Well, probably not. But anyway.
It was a light chuckle.
It was, yeah. Like a huh, nerd. but the 3DO is, in hindsight, piece of shit. Piece of shit. It's a laughing stock.
It had a lot of bad games.
In 1993, Ray, it was Time Magazine's fucking product of the year.
Yeah. And that really showed. I mean, they pushed this thing really, really hard.
Huge.
There was a big marketing push.
Yes.
And part of the reason why was it could do texture map 3D graphics.
Yes.
Yeah. And some games were a lot better than others when it came to using them.
Yes.
But it could do
it. It could do them.
And when you look at games like Road Rash that came out for Panasonic,
mm-hmm.
Or for the 3DO, I think the Road Rash on 3DO is at least as good, if not better, than like the PlayStation version the Saturn version.
Most people do say that, and they also say that the original Need for Speed on 3DO looks the best and plays the best on the 3DO.
Yeah.
And that is where the praise kind of begins and ends, those two games, unfortunately. Yeah, so but for $700, you can buy Time Magazine's Product of the Year, the 3DO. And now we should get into a little bit about what the 3DO is. So obviously, people know it as a console. But really what the 3DO is like a platform. It wasn't even like, you know, if you want to get like really fucking existential about it, like 3DO was a name and like a blueprint of hardware architecture.
Yeah, in IT infrastructure, which is the industry I work in, we call that a reference architecture.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of reference architectures out there. A lot of manufacturers use them to give customers the ability to use their own equipment, and mm-hmm. then they'll support it. Or in this case, the games will work on it.
Right.
As long as the underlying hardware is up to spec with the reference architecture. And for that reason, there was like 9 different versions of the 3DO.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the way it worked is like, let's say that I'm Panasonic, right? So I go to 3DO and I back up the Brinks truck and give them a bunch of money to get the 3DO license. So now I can go manufacture my own video game console.
Yeah.
And the 3DO games will play on it and will work on it.
Yep. And now you're part of the video game industry.
And now I'm in the video game industry, baby. So like the idea, and we'll get into this later on, but like 3DO as a concept is like the idea of like a one platform video game industry. And that was kind of the goal that I think Trip Hawkins had in mind.
Yeah, and it's consistent with everything Trip Hawkins had done previously to working on the 3DO. You know, very thinking, very, very much wanting to push.
Thought thinking.
How do you say that?
Forward thinking. Thought provoking, forward thinking.
There we go.
Yeah.
He's both of those.
Yeah. Slam dunk. He's also thought thinking as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
and if you look at it, like he was always trying to push the video game industry forward.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
Wanted video games to be seen as art.
Mm-hmm.
And this was just another form of him, in his mind, I think, opening up or at least like cracking open and making video games open source, basically.
Yeah.
In terms of the hardware.
Right.
So that anyone could make games and release it. On anything was the idea.
So off the top of my head, there's the original Panasonic 3DO. That's a front loader. Big old heavy beast. I think that thing weighs like 10 pounds.
Yeah, that's the one that kind of models the audio equipment mm-hmm. of the day.
Yes.
And
in like a hi-fi system kind of a thing.
Yeah, you could sit it right on top
it's interesting you bring that up because this was marketed as that as well. So it's like not only is this a video game console that looks better than pretty much every fucking arcade game out there. But you can also put this into your stereo component system and it's like a world-class CD player as well. And if you look at the controller of this thing, it has, you know, there's ABC, the directional pad, all that stuff. But also in embossed plastic, like raised plastic, there's a stop button, a play button, and then track forward, track backwards, rewind. So this thing was designed to be a part of your home theater stereo setup.
That's one
of the ways they marketed it. So then what's funny about that, too, is like later on, one of the last versions of the 3DO, and probably the most popular version, which I think was like was released at like a $300 price point. But that's the FC1. That's a top loader. So all the other features that the original one had kind of go away in terms of like you can't stack it anymore. Like there's a top loading lid, all that stuff.
Right.
They do both have RCA outs, so you can still loop it into a stereo receiver and play your CDs that way.
Okay.
There's the Gold Star one, which is also a front loader one.
Yeah, Gold Star made like 2 or 3 of them.
Yeah, but those were all kind of like revisions on the same thing.
Right.
Then I want to say in Japan only there was a JVC one, which is kind of funny because there's also the JVC Wonder Mega and the XI. So they were making, JVC was making a fucking Sega system and they were also making a 3DO.
Yeah, well, whatever.
Yeah, why not? Fuck it. We're Victor, baby. Our mascot's a dog. We do whatever it takes.
And Sanyo also made one.
Yeah, Sanyo.
You know.
I always call that company Sanyo. But it is Sanyo, it is. I've never, ever heard it pronounced that way, but it is technically Sanyo because they're a Japanese company, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, yeah, I'm totally accurate.
Sanyo.
On purpose.
Yeah. totally meant to do that.
So far, this episode is going fantastic.
Amen, pal. So yeah, that's how 3DO was. It was a platform concept, ethereal thing that if you were an electronics maker, you know, buy these components that you need, throw them in the box of your choosing, market it however the fuck you want, and we'll go handle the games.
Yeah.
So Trip Hawkins and his cohorts, they're going to go secure developers. They're going to have a lot of in-house developments. A lot of 3DO games were made by, you know, their in-house artists and programmers and stuff like that. And then there was also some third-party support that I think a lot of people don't remember. But there was a fair amount of fucking third-party support.
There
on the 3DO.
Was a good amount of
third-party
support. One of those companies is probably one of the most recognized companies today because of Tomb Raider, and that's Crystal Dynamics.
Yeah, Crystal Dynamics is a fucking huge one.
Yeah, and Crystal Dynamics made a lot of games for the 3DO.
Mm-hmm.
Solar Eclipse being one of my favorites.
I think Return Fire is Crystal Dynamics, and that is, in my opinion, the best 3DO game.
Yeah,
it's
Return Fire
awesome.
Is super cool.
And it's one of the few 3D. So I recently had a 3DO. I bought one 5-6 years ago. I bought one from Game Dude just on a whim. Like, I just finished up my last TV job before I fucking went on what I like to call temporary retirement. But I had, you know, had some fucking pocket money. Went to Game Dude with friend of the show Quan, and I was like, well, there's a 3DO. I'm going to buy this because I'm stupid. But so I bought a 3DO. It's a CD-based system that came out in 1993. It is not difficult to go and find games for 3DO and go ahead and burn them. That's like a really fucking easy thing to do because there's no protection or anything like that. You don't need a mod chip. And then no one fucking cares. I'm sorry. No one cares that you're burning 3DO games. Who gives a shit? Like, go do it.
Well, there's a company called American Laser Games.
Oh yeah,
which is, I'm sure they're still around. They made Crime Patrol, and I guarantee,
brother,
if you burn that game, the FBI,
they're gonna
will,
get you.
Yeah, like within
again.
Yeah,
shut it down.
Yeah,
shut it down.
Yeah, five minute response. They have emergency response teams for people burning Crime Patrol,
specifically Crime Patrol. So I'm fresh up on my 3DO is where I was going with that whole sidebar Game Dude trip. And out of all the stuff I burned, over and over, I kept going back to Return Fire. I returned to Return Fire. So if you're going to get into the 3DO, I recommend that game above all others. But then there's a few more that we'll get into in what I'm going to be calling 3DO story time.
Yeah, Return Fire is kind of like the Strike series from EA.
Yeah, it's a lot like it, except for you drive multiple vehicles. Like,
yeah,
it's actually another game you can kind of compare it to is Blast Corps for the N64.
Yep.
So it's a little bit of a Strike, a little bit of a Blast Corps, and a whole lot of a fucking good time.
Yeah, it's really fun. Whereas like the Strike series, for example, is kind of like. It's a little bit grindy. It's hard.
Yeah.
You know, you have to like really kind of manage your.
Yeah, Return Fire is a lot more arcadey.
Yeah.
There's a lot of levels and they're over like quickly.
Yep.
So the game really fucking moves. And also graphically, it really holds up, I think.
Yeah.
Like, it scales. It has almost like a stylized look to it. Not like overly stylized, but, you know, like Army Men kind of a deal.
Just enough to make up for the lack of like.
Of the detail and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the way that the camera scales in and out with the polygons and there really doesn't appear to be a lot of like aliasing issues or anything like that. So
yeah, and that's
it's a damn fine game.
That's another cool thing about the 3DO is it can output in 480i.
Mm-hmm.
For a system that was built in 1993.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. So that's impressive. So you can put in games today and at least some of the better ones are gonna look pretty good. As
yeah.
Long as-
I was playing the 3DO that I had, which I had sold at a convention recently, but I had the original one, so I had an S video out. And I had an old Westinghouse flat screen TV and I just, that's how I played it. And it looked great. Like, I mean, it looked as great as a 3DO is going to look, but I mean, in terms of like the signal that thing spits out, is good. And fucking it goddamn should be good, Ray. Cause it was a $700 system.
Yeah. It's like $2,000 in 2019 money.
So, okay. I alluded to it earlier. Let's jump into 3DO story time. Cause we have several, the first one I want to talk about, and he's not here to fucking defend himself, but friend of the show and overall Lord of all cavemen, Peter Neal, he had a fucking 3DO as a kid. Like he was that fucking Rick Schroeder Silver Spoons kid, and he wasn't even that well. I mean, his parents weren't like all that. He lived near us, so he wasn't rich.
Yeah, no, but he was a single kid.
Oh yeah, that's a thing. But yeah, he's the only guy that I ever knew who had a 3DO when 3DO was a relevant thing.
Yeah,
And
he was the one person in Southern California.
And I've talked,
or at least in the Inland Empire.
Yeah, well, for sure. He was the absolutely only guy in the Inland Empire that bought one. And you and I both, we've talked to him about it. He always talks about it as like a really lonely experience.
Yeah.
Because like there's no, like everyone was sharing games with friends and like he can't do that shit.
Yeah. He's like, hey guys, want to play Gex?
Yeah. Or like, let me borrow that Mortal Kombat. Oh, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Or let me borrow that. Oh, it doesn't work on my fucking 3DO. it is a sad, lonely fucking experience.
Yeah, I can see that.
But then I don't know how the fuck he got games, because if I recall, I know later on you were able to go to like Best Buy and find 3DO there.
Radical Video Games, though, had 3DO.
Oh, that's right.
And had 3DO
perennial
games.
Show favorite Radical Video Games. Yeah, definitely stocked 3DO.
Because that's how I played Jurassic Park on the 3DO, Jurassic Park on 3DO blew my mind.
At that time, especially, it's completely fucking mind-blowing. Like
Full motion video.
And the quality of the video is
very good.
Better than, certainly better than fucking Sega CD by a country mile, but even better than Saturn and PlayStation.
Yeah. And incidentally, that's what led me to go out of my way to buy Jurassic Park for the Sega CD.
Mm-hmm.
Not the same game.
Nope. No,
totally
it is not.
Different game.
I actually prefer the Sega CD one. It's like a missed game.
The Sega CD one is by far a more complete game.
Yeah.
And it's actually quite a large game.
Yeah.
And
well, it's just as
challenging.
If I have to play between, fucking like Prize Fighter or Ground Zero Texas versus like a cool point and click adventure game, like I'm going to pick the cool point and click adventure game every time.
Well, but it wasn't like quite as like awe-inspiring or impressive time I played Jurassic Park
certainly
for 3DO.
Certainly not.
And in 3DO, there's a level where you drive the Jeep with the T-Rex chasing you in the mirror.
In the back, yeah.
And you can see it in the mirror when it gets closer. And that right there, I was like, I can't believe this.
Yeah.
I think outside of the arcades, that was the first 3D level I played ever.
Oh, it had to have been. Look, that's like the story of the 3DO.
Yeah.
Is that this thing is doing such advanced graphics that only people at the time who had like $6,000 PCs were able to see.
Right.
And a lot of the times those games were the same games that you're going to see on the 3DO. Because that's what, the graphics were so ahead of their time that there weren't even a lot of developers who were making games that had texture map polygons. So like the talent pool to make games was fucking even limited. But back to story time, I wanted to tell one, and look, I apologize if things get heated here, okay? Because they could. They very well could. This happened like almost 20 years ago. Actually, really close to 20 years ago. My man, who I'm looking at right here, and I, we would, as many of our listeners I'm sure do and did, we were going video game shopping. We were hopping around to all the little mom and pop areas.
I'm pretty sure we ditched class.
We 100% ditched high school that day.
Yeah, 100%. To go video game shopping.
Yeah, and it's not like we didn't, that was kind of a routine thing, which is funny because we all got good grades. So
yeah.
Take that, public school. You're easy.
Well, it's not like we were ditching school to like
shoot heroin.
Yeah, drink beers and, do something bad. No. Like we were like ditching school
to spend our fucking money on video games.
Yeah.
On old video games that no one cared about at the time.
Yeah, exactly. Incidentally, I got almost arrested in high school for stealing books from a university library that I was that I couldn't check out because I wasn't a student, but I needed them for my research paper. And my mom pulled me in to the room and she's just like, I can't believe you did this and I would never expect this from you. And I'm like, hey mom, let's just keep in context here that like the police are calling you because I'm stealing books for a research paper.
Yeah. Well, I guess
you can't really be mad at that. Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, you could have been stealing stuff to go, sell to get meth. That wasn't happening.
Yeah,
You were trying to further your educational career. God bless it.
Yeah, because our shitty public school and shitty public library didn't have any of the books on the subject I needed.
Yeah, so fuck them.
Yes. So back to ditching school and buying video games.
Yes. So we are in this shop. It was called M&M Video Games, which I think they always ran two stores, and I think one of them is still around.
One of them's still there. Yeah, the Upland one.
The Upland one.
No, the one is that a different company than the one over in Murrieta?
That's gone. That's gone. Gone. So this is gonna be super fucking inside baseball, but who cares? We have some time to fill. The origins of, let's go with the origins of M&M video games, okay. In the Inland Empire. So they had the store that we went to was the Marietta location.
Okay.
They always had the Upland store. That was like the feeder store. That was the main one and it opened up first.
Okay.
That one I believe is still open today. I might be wrong. But the Marietta store moved locations twice. And on the last location they had outright sold the whole store and all the inventory to another person. Then they ran the store for, I want to say, maybe like a year, year and a half.
Oh, okay.
And then they just fucking went belly up, just shut down.
So this would have been like within the last year or two.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah, because I remember you and I, when you first moved back from Argentina, you and I went there.
Yeah.
And that was, what year did you come back? Was it 14 or 15?
4 years ago. So yeah, 2015.
2015.
And I just went there like maybe a little over a year ago, mm-hmm. when I went and visited my sister. I bought a bunch of Saturn games.
Yeah, it recently closed. Yeah. So within the last 2 years. Yeah, okay. It sucks because that was like... again, no one fucking outside of us cares about this but just to say, like, that was like the motherland for us.
I for sure care about it because when I go to my sister's house, I always volunteer to go make like a beer run or like
because you want to go pop in.
Yeah. And that's the first thing I do. I just drive down to the store.
But that place, like, we've talked about Radical Video Games a million fucking times, which is a store that no one gives a shit about except for us and Uncle Bob. But M&M was the other one. That was the one that was like all of fucking high school. Whenever I would come back from college to visit my family, like it was just a fucking institution.
Yeah, and they always had really good stuff. Yeah.
And the bulk of my...
And a lot of it.
When I started hardcore collecting, which was like 1999, 2000, 90% of my shit I bought from M&M in Marietta.
Okay.
So like that whole collection, which I don't have anymore, but that whole collection probably came out of that store except for, you know, shit in Japan and like other things here and there.
Right.
So yeah, they were fucking... important institution, and that's the setting. So the setting in the background is there.
Yeah.
So we're in the store, you and I. We're in high school. We come cruising in.
Like a couple of cool kids. A
couple of fucking just badass, like tons of babes are with us.
Yeah. Oh, tons we're so radical.
Yeah. I'm 6'5", 300 pounds, 1% body fat.
Yeah.
My man over here, he's 6'3", solid 280. He can do 150 pull-ups all day.
So we pull up to the shop. We hopped out of our convertible. Exactly.
Dude, this is the best 3DO story ever. But anyway, I see the fucking 3DO first. This is what I got
to
get out
there. You claim to see it first.
Fuck you. I see it first. And if my memory serves, I was like, holy shit. Because there was a big old placard, like a cardboard placard that said $60, all games included.
Yeah.
And it was a huge row of games.
Yeah, there's 28 of them.
Oh, yeah. Of course, you would know that because you're the asshole who bought it. So anyway, I called this fucking thing out. I was like, holy shit, that's a 3DO. I don't even remember you being like interested at all when I said it. So I was like looking around, you know, this is before fucking smartphones, obviously. So I don't know how much money I have in my little fucking teenager bank account. I don't have any fucking cash or anything. And so I'm like, fuck, I'm kind of friendly with the manager of the store by this point. So I was like trying to like on the sly be like, hey buddy.
Honor system.
Yeah. Do you think you cannot sell this? So that, cause I was going to be paid like the next day. Cause I remember that's why I got so hot about it. It was cause like, it was like a 24 hour difference where like I had money or not having money versus having money was like 24 hours for me. So I was like talking to this dude, like, hey, could you like hold this for me? I'm going to come back tomorrow when I get paid. And I swear to fucking God, he was like, yeah, no problem. Like he said, yeah, no problem.
Right.
And then you come in. What's your side of this thing?
So that's not how I remember it at all. So I remember us coming in and we saw the 3DO and all the games, mm-hmm. and you're like, holy shit, that's a 3DO. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, you know, and I remember having about $60 to spend,
mm-hmm.
Cause I was, you know, bagging groceries at the time, had a little bit of income, mm-hmm. and blew it all on paying Peter for gas to drive me around and video games.
Right.
The way I remember it is, you know, like we were both looking at it and you're like, oh, cool. And then, you know, we were like $60 and he's like, yeah, solid 60 or something like to that nature.
Yeah.
And then I remember you kind of went, oh, all right, well, I'm going to look around. Like, and I perceived that as not really being like all in on it, right? So
you son almost of
immediately,
a bitch.
Almost because it wasn't like you went to the side and had some like heartwarming conversation and no, came back and told me about it.
It wasn't heartwarming, but I did. Because
none of that happened.
Fuck off.
All what happened is you were like, oh, okay. And like went to look around and I just stepped in and was like, I'll buy it. And he's like, okay, here you go.
Well, okay, so I'm going to jump back in here. The side conversation may or may not have happened. It could be total manufactured memory. I was we had all those bikini models with us. It's so hard to find. It's very distracting.
Yeah.
But
let me just go back to my convertible for a hot 100.
Yeah. But I'm fairly sure that the conversation with the guy took place, because that's why I got mad. It was because I had thought it was kind of more or less set in stone that the dude would save it for me. And the fact that you're like, hey, I'll buy that. And he's like, yeah, no problem. I was like, fuck both of you assholes.
Dude, that's the way capitalism works, my friend.
I mean, I guess.
You snooze, you lose.
I snoozed and I lost.
About recognizing opportunity and investing at the precise right time.
You're a bloodthirsty human-eating shark is what you are. But, okay, at the end of the day...
I did let you play it a lot.
I was just going to say, at the end of the day, it was a part of the family. Yes. And we did get to play a whole lot of Crime Patrol.
Well, we did it. Yeah, we did. Yeah. we did, which is a fantastic experience. I recommend anybody who can get their hands on a Crime Patrol to not burn it, because we don't want you to get in trouble with that.
We have established, do not burn the game. Purchase the game.
Yes. Get a real copy.
Right.
Play it and enjoy it. Yeah, because this we did an episode a while back on our Sega Nights,
yeah,
which was just kind of reminiscing about
the, yeah, we told the story about
the culture of where we come from, right, in terms of video games. And this I purchased at kind of the height, or maybe the beginning, the crescendo of Sega Nights.
Well, I think it was in the heat. Like it was absolutely in the center of all the action.
Because it quickly became like a centerpiece.
Yeah, it was a fan favorite. Nights. It was a fan favorite.
Yeah, because we cycled through all those games.
Oh, yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember one of the games that we played a ton was Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo.
Yeah.
Which that game, not a lot of people realize, the only home port of that game came out on the 3DO. Like, obviously, years and years later, it would be included on compilations. And, I think most recently, the Ultra version for the Switch, Ultra Street Fighter 2 Turbo or whatever it's called.
Right.
But like for many years, Super Turbo was only available on the 3DO. So that in and of itself, and it looked really good. It was like very, very close to the arcade version. The only thing it lacked was it didn't have the same parallax scrolling as the arcade version did, which is a big graphical hit. But in terms of the animation and the sprite sizes and all that, it was super fucking, even with the shitty 3-button controllers, it was super,
it was playable. It was playable. Yeah, yeah. Totally playable.
And we played it a shit ton.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of games on the 3DO that you kind of wouldn't expect, yeah, but like are on it and look good. Like Puzzle Bobble's one of them. Looks, yeah, really, really good.
Samurai Showdown looks excellent on the 3DO.
Samurai Showdown's on it. The Alone in the Dark series, mm-hmm, starts off on the 3DO.
Yeah.
Basically, every Crystal Dynamics game on the Saturn and PS2 started as a 3DO game.
Right.
Is another one. So like the Horde, things like that.
Yeah, yeah. Starring noted kook, Kirk Cameron, in the Horde.
Yep.
So another 3DO story I have, this is like towards the waning years. But so I had this neighbor friend who, at the time he was a cool dude, but he ended up turning into like a real piece of shit, which is indicative of of where we grew up. But when he was younger, he wasn't exposed to all the piece of shittery kind of things.
That's
he would
the
later
maturity
get into.
Process. Of,
yeah,
in the
exactly.
In the
yeah, it's an evolution, really.
Yes.
So anyway, he wasn't super wealthy, but and he also was had a, it was just him and his mom, so like they weren't of well means or whatever, but she just came home one day and like surprised him and had a 3DO, brand new 3DO, and a bunch of fucking games. So she ended up they were all on clearance at the Best Buy that we all live near.
Okay.
And she just brought it home out of nowhere, and it was like, well, holy shit, there's a 3DO. So I think the games and this, I bring this up because this is where I played 3DO the most as a kid. So we had
your tween years.
I think I was full blown teen, baby. I think I was 13. Oh yeah, right. I had some armpit hair, daddy. Well, I was born with armpit hair, so that doesn't, that doesn't really count for anything. So, but we had we played Gex, we played Crypt Killer, which I know I've talked about on this show. That's one of my all time favorite like FMV like B horror. It's so good, like yeah. It's so bad. It's so good. And then we played the 3D game Balls, B-A-L-L-Z.
Yeah.
Which is not good, but we had convinced ourselves that it was at the time.
Yeah.
and then the last one was fucking, God, what was it? That puzzle game, Zoop. The puzzle, it was,
oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
It was, that was another game that was published on every platform available.
Yeah, that came out on everything.
Everything. So those were the games. And anyway, we played them all the time. And fast forward, I think it was like a year. And then the N64 comes out, right? And I had N64 and Mario 64. This dude comes over, and he's like, I got a deal for you, pal. And I was like, well, okay, what is it? And he's all, I'll trade you my 3DO. And I had the fucking 64 for like a month. Like, we're talking, if I got it in Christmas, then I would have, this must probably have been like January 25th or right. something like that, right? So this fucking asshole has the audacity to ride his bike, you know, balancing his 3DO on his handlebar and be like, straight trade, bro. Give me all my 3DO and all the games for your 64 and Mario 64. And I looked at him like he had a fucking smear of shit on his face. Just like, just horrified, like, who do you think you are that I would do something so foolish?
Now, if you just look at MSRP.
Oh, no, totally, man.
Great deal.
Great deal. All the numbers are in his favor.
Yeah, but Mario 64 is worth basically every 3DO game combined.
Every single one of them. And some. And then some, exactly. But, and this wasn't, he didn't have the fucking $700 3DO, pal. This was like the, he bought it like $80 clearance Best Buy special. He meant well. We'll say he meant well. The deal didn't go through, though.
Yeah. It was a valiant effort. Like, yeah, I can see the logic building in his head.
Sure.
You know?
A tough ask. So when you, that 3DO that you outright stole from under my nose.
Barely.
You took that with you to college and stuff like that, right?
Yes, I did eventually.
Okay.
So when I first went to college, it was in the dorms.
Oh, right.
They basically put you in an 8x8 cell with two other dudes.
Yeah, and you like have like a place for your backpack and that's it.
Yeah, so all I brought was my Dreamcast.
Okay.
Because I could hook it up to my computer monitor.
Right.
Which is the only way to play a Dreamcast.
Yeah, VGA all day, baby.
Yep. And so I left everything at my mom's house. Mm-hmm. She put everything in boxes and turned my old room into a study,
mm-hmm.
which nobody in my family except for me study, so I don't know what she was thinking. But
she liked the sound of it.
Later, when I got my first apartment, that's when I brought everything up. And yes, okay. The 3DO for sure came with me.
So how long did you end up having that?
Until 2005. Oh, okay. When I sold everything and moved back down to Orange County briefly before
Argentina.
Yeah, before going to Argentina.
So what were the real standout games for you? What did you find yourself playing a lot? Or did you like just not give a shit at this point? Because I'll let you finish what you're going to say, but then I have like a button to put on it at the end of it.
I mean, we've already talked about the games mm-hmm. that I have the most fond memories of.
Right.
I didn't really play it after kind of the high school era, hanging out with you guys.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really have anybody around me who had any interest at all.
Yeah, you were going to like a fucking like total farm town college and shit.
Well, I mean, none of the students were from those kinds of areas.
That's true.
But like, you know, at the time, I mean, the first year of college, like Xbox had come out.
Yeah.
Right. And this was
everyone,
like,
if you are into playing video games, you're playing Halo on that thing.
Yeah. People are playing Xbox and PS2 and GameCube.
Right.
And like, you know, it took me a really long time in the college town I went to find other video game nerds that were as hardcore as I am.
Sure.
To like actually go explore things that like, you know, are older, but like have value.
Well, and like the periphery stuff, like 3DO is in this category, Jaguar is in this category, stuff that like wasn't totally insubstantial. Like they have somewhat like certainly larger libraries than like your fucking Virtual Boy or the Nuon, which I'll talk about in a second. But like, no, in the grand scheme of video games, no one gives a fuck about them. But they are interesting and they are like worth exploring.
Well, for sure, especially since a lot of the you know, or at least some series that are like still really popular today, like mm-hmm. Need for Speed started off on the 3DO.
Exactly.
So like if you're, but you know, not everyone has that interest to go back and like rediscover
for sure, yeah,
you know, why it is they're playing what they're playing today.
Well, in the 3DO, and this is like the button I wanted to say at the end of your is like I believe that there's like a certain, there's like a mysticism behind the 3DO and like the fact that it was, especially like guys in our generation, you know, like looking at fucking 40 like a deer in headlights. But like dudes in our generation, like it still has this like fucking appeal to it. Like, wow, that's a $700. Like you still have that little kid brain where all you're playing is your Genesis. But then here's this Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
Same thing with the Neo Geo.
Yeah. It's the same reason why dudes having a midlife crisis go back and buy like a 65 Mustang.
Yeah.
And like, you know, get it all painted.
We go and buy Panzer Dragoon Saga and fucking arcade cabinets.
And 3DOs. Yeah.
But there's a certain, so the Neo Geo doesn't suffer from this because I think the Neo Geo is fucking just objectively good for an expensive thing. If you have that kind of crazy money.
Because it's playing arcade games that are objectively good.
Yes. And Atari, this is probably only my opinion, but I would even throw, and to a far lesser extent, I would throw the Jaguar in that like it's worthy. Like, there's Tempest 2000 is fucking great. If you are a fan of shitty fighting games, that's like your mecca. Like, there's some stuff worth exploring, even to this day on the Jaguar. 3DO has this luster problem where, like, it seems like a good idea, but it's not.
Yeah.
And that's, like, my most recent experience with the 3DO was that, where it's like, fuck, I can't wait to play Way of the Warrior. And then, like, I play Way of the Warrior, and I was like, this is awful. Or, like, I can't wait to play XY, you know, like, even Gex. Like, Gex was that one of the games that I played, like, the most. And I'm talking about my neighbor friend who had the 3DO. And at the time, I fucking loved it. Like, I thought it was super, I thought Dana Gould was super funny.
Yeah.
I loved, like, the levels and stuff like that. I went back and played Gex, and... dude, it's so, like, marauding, and, like, the way they design the levels is, like, you want them to end, and they never fucking do.
Yeah, they just keep going.
Yeah, so, that, like...
it's kind of like Bug for the Saturn.
Yeah, exactly. And they, so, like, really, overall, the only game that I was like, you know what, this is a good game, this is rock solid, ended up being, for me, Return Fire. Return Fire is on, it's on Saturn, it's on PlayStation.
Right.
Like, it's not unique to the 3DO. I did... this is a game I actually bought and didn't burn, but when I bought the 3DO, I picked up the original Alone in the Dark, which I, like, embarrassingly had never played before.
Right.
And being such a fucking survival horror nerd that I am, like, I felt it was about time.
Yeah.
Because it's the grandpa.
Yep.
Like, it's, you don't get Resident Evil without Alone in the Dark.
Right.
And mechanically, atmospherically, the whole thing.
Yeah. Wrote the book.
So that was an interesting experience, but it was an exercise in futility, or how do you say that shit?
Futility.
I was going to say fertility, but that is not what I meant.
That Alone in the Dark is,
I had to play that
it
game.
It probably shouldn't be an exercise in fertility.
No, that's bad thinking. If it's that for you.
I would say though, all the way up until I sold the 3DO, and one of the reasons that I think hurt a little bit mm-hmm. the most when I'd sold it was I played Road Rash on the 3DO the entire time I owned it.
Yeah.
I would always pop that in.
It might be the best Road Rash game ever. Yeah. And I think on the 3DO specifically. Because, like, it has all the Saturn version is the same one. The original PlayStation version is the same one. I'm not talking about Road Rash 3D with fucking, you know, Mark McGrath on the soundtrack.
Right.
But that 3DO Road Rash is really, really fucking good. And if you're a fan of Road Rash, I can't recommend that one enough.
Yeah.
But it's not... I still don't think it's, like, worth... if you're a video game collector and you want that fucking, I mean, it's kind of like, why not? Because you can get 3DOs for still fairly cheap, and again, burn them, because who fucking cares? The games are easy to find. So, like, the cost of entry is still pretty low. But you will, I believe you will find yourself selling that bad boy within like a 6-month time span.
Yeah.
Or time span.
Everybody gets rid of them eventually.
Yes. Yeah. And that's why you
or
can buy them.
To.
Yeah. That's why you can buy them, is because there's a constant mixing around of people who don't want and want 3DOs. So for the last chunk of this episode, I wanted to talk about kind of like the overall philosophy of the 3DO and kind of where we're now, how many years is it? 26 years removed from the launch of this thing.
Yeah.
And gosh. We're kind of looking at this future in the video game industry that you can make the argument that that was the 3DO concept.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about Google Stadia or Stadia. I don't know how they pronounce it.
Yeah, who knows?
But before I go into this thing, I did want to mention, and it relates to this, but so 3DO as a platform that you can license out and manufacture, this concept was duplicated in the big DVD boom of the late 90s, early 2000s. There was VM Labs was this obscure company that made the Nuon. Are you familiar with the Nuon at all?
No.
So the Nuon is the exact concept of a 3DO, except for it is specific to DVD players. So there was, I think, 3 or 4 different models. There's a Toshiba one. Toshiba is the only one I can recall off the top of my head. But I know that there's different electronic companies that made these things. But they're regular DVD players that have a little Nuon logo. And then there was a little door that you could open that had controller ports.
Okay.
And it was a fairly competent little thing, like probably somewhere in between a Dreamcast and a PS2 in terms of graphic fidelity.
Sure.
Again, it was like a Trojan horse kind of a deal where you're going to buy a DVD player because that's the future of watching fucking movies.
Why not have why it
not,
play games?
Yeah, why not spend the extra $50 or $100 and exactly right, have it play games. So that thing was like the 3DO, a bit of a popcorn fart.
Right.
No one cared, but like even way less so than the 3DO. It's only interesting because Tempest 3000 came on it, and that's like the last I shouldn't say last, because they did a 4000, but that's like a remake of 2. But so the sequel to 2000, made by Jeff Minter, the LlamaSoft guy, made Tempest 3000 exclusively for the Nuon, which is pretty funny. The Nuon only had 8 games total. And then it also had, there was DVD features, like, you know, how like you have your commentary tracks and your special features. They were also trying to court movie studios, which I think this is, for the time, was a great idea. Just, and I don't really understand fully why it bombed, but they would go court movie studios and be like, hey, we can put these little Nuon mini games on your DVDs, and then you can sell the DVD for like $10 more or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And there was only 4 movies that were released that had that feature, and one of them was fucking Bedazzled, starring Brendan Fraser and Elizabeth Hurley. So not a lot of names pushing this stuff out the door.
How did this thing fail?
How did it fucking fail? But yeah, the Nuon is essentially like another attempt at a 3DO like platform.
Yeah, and the whole concept, which we were alluding to earlier, being innovative, is really making it, you know, this one platform concept,
right,
where it's like, you know, there's really just one media, and you know, everyone has access to it. And
smartphones, just laptops, anything that has internet connectivity is where this stuff, where Stadia is supposed to be.
Right, and Google's version is a web browser, right?
Yeah,
and that's it. As long as your device can access any web browser, it can. Well, presumably Chrome is what they're going to do it on.
Right.
But you'll be able to access, buy games, and play them just right out of your web browser. And this model is, I think, going to be the future of video games.
Well, it certainly, since it hasn't really happened yet or anything like that, and the buzz about it, it does unquestionably, like, that. You're right. It seems like this is where we're all fucking headed.
Yeah.
I'm skeptical in that they're never, I don't think that anyone's ever going to be able to get on board with each other. It's almost like going to Nintendo and Sony. I'm sorry, but like, you know, they're not gonna go to Google and be like, oh yeah, here's a Mario game, or here's fucking the new Uncharted for Google.
Yeah, that's the major hurdle.
That's the biggest hurdle they have is content.
But it's moving in that direction, because if you look at like Roblox and Minecraft, I mean Roblox especially.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, that just runs out of a browser.
Yep.
And it is,
my son plays
enormous.
Roblox on like a 10-year-old iPad.
Yeah.
And it still works fine.
Well, that's why, the laptop I got my daughter is just a Chromebook. It basically does nothing but open up a web browser, and she can play Roblox.
Right.
So I think that's where it's going to head. I don't know how it'll shake out. I don't know if it'll be like, I kind of see it working like the Netflix Hulu scenario, where you just subscribe to like Nintendo's thing. And like, and there's some device, whether it's the TV or whatever, that just logs into the
I watched that entire Google press conference demonstration of Stadia, and they never really answered that question. And then like the buzz about it after the fact was kind of still in the unknown. Like, for example, like they on the press conference they used an Assassin's Creed game to show the technology off.
Right.
So do I go to Ubisoft and pay them, let's say, $20, and do I get access to that game in perpetuity? But the way I play it is just go on Chrome and download the Stadia software. Or, like you're saying, do I pay Google, you know, let's say it's $10 a month, and then out of that money, Ubisoft gets their chunk, just like how like studios get their chunk from Netflix or Hulu. Like, that's the stuff that's really unknown right now.
Well, and I still think globally, and even in the United States, it's a lot. I sometimes feel like a lot of these companies like are so used to living in like very highly connected urban centers.
Yes.
That they're not really connected with the reality that not everybody has.
Omaha, Nebraska is a place. And there are people there who have money that they can spend. But can they have access your service?
Well, but not only that, like, you know, all of South America, you know?
Yeah. Oh,
like,
globally, it's even crazier.
Yeah. So, you know, like, I don't think we're there yet, simply because there are a lot of markets out there that just aren't ready for it.
And that's the big difference between like the concept of a 3DO and the concept of Google Stadia. Like, with the concept of a 3DO, there's hardware, right? And it's just like, this is the hardware that we agree to use. And if you want to make a device, like, pay for the blueprint and pay for the name, and then go make whatever the fuck that you want. And it's going to work. But with the streaming stuff, like, it's dependent upon having this infrastructure. That isn't there. Now, the counter argument to that is like, well, what Google has really done is like figured out a way to like basically redesign how data is distributed over the internet so that if you have shitty internet connection, you'll still be able to have a good experience with Stadia. And that's what I'm most skeptical on.
Yeah, that's I mean, so that whole what you just said, that's why I think, yes, eventually the industry will move into that model.
Right.
Eventually.
Yeah.
But I'm just not I'm with you. I'm skeptical that yeah. now is the time.
And then the other hurdle, which we already talked about, is the content. Like I just don't see with the way, especially now, obviously. But the way that the Switch is doing and the way that the PS4 is doing, and we have these new platforms that are basically coming out in 2020 and 2021. That's like a whole other generation. So anywhere from 5 to 10 years apiece.
Yeah.
Where that content is locked. The exclusive stuff is going to be locked into those platforms. So really,
nobody's thinking of ditching PS5 to go buy Google Stadia.
Yeah, exactly. Like no, especially like the bread and butter of this industry, the video game player, you know, us.
Yeah.
Like I have zero. I think that Stadia is a really cool concept. Of course, when it comes out, like I might even like try it out. But like, make no mistake, I'm more excited for the possibilities of like what the new PlayStation and the new Xbox, and if there is a Switch Pro, like I'm way more interested and invested to see what those things do versus like the ability to play like the newest fucking Call of Duty on a fucking
browser.
Yeah.
So
real quick, sorry to cut you off, but like there's so many of these fucking like Steam sales and like the Epic Store where like, do you know the Epic Store, you just get a free game like every month. They're like, hey, here's a free game, and you don't have to sign up for anything. It's just here you go, free. But it's on your hard drive. You download it. It's on your hard drive. You play own it. It's dependable.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to rely on... Well, you have to have the internet connection, I'm sure, to at least, like how Steam works. So you have to go on the internet, like, once a week to, like, get all your licenses in order. But then you're off to the races. You don't need the internet to play your games. Stadia, you have to have the internet, obviously.
Yeah. However, when... I agree with you. But when the whole industry, you know, 15 years, 20 years from now, moves over to the one platform model,
yeah,
they'll be making historical documentaries about how the 3DO and Trip Hawkins started it all off.
So not only are they going to talk about the 3DO, but they're also going to bring up a guy named, well, they probably won't, but for the sake of this show, I'll bring him up. But so Dennis Dyack, who was the founder, one of the founders of Silicon Knights, who did Eternal Darkness for the GameCube, and they infamously crashed and burned, which I think we talked about on one of our shows. But I remember like 10, you know, 8, 9, 10 years ago, he was going on this circuit of podcasts where he was talking about the one platform future. So he, like years ago, like a decade ago, basically predicted Google doing Stadia, where it's like, this is how it's going to work. Like you're going to have... In the way he was talking about it was like, you'll have a box. It's like a unit, you know, and anyone can make the box, but the box plugs into the internet and that's the media. And then boom, like games are just going to exist and they'll be like fed out to whatever the boxes are. So he didn't get it right in that, like, it's going to be like browser based.
Yeah.
But he did get it right in the way that, like, it's going to be internet dependent, all that other stuff. So,
the whole entire concept. So if you subscribe to our Patreon, you will get exclusive content that goes over this. But we did a quick hit on VDI, Virtual Distributed Infrastructure. So and that's all this is. So what VDI does is it consolidates all the compute and GPU power back into a single data center.
Right.
And then in the business world, you have what's called thin clients, which sit on desks. And all those do are give you a small, tiny little box to hook a monitor up to, hook your mouse and keyboard into, and then that connects back to the VDI infrastructure on the back end,
right,
which is actually doing all the processing and graphical work and whatever. It's just feeding into your
I mean, you know more than this than I do, obviously, because you're in that industry, but that's how things like PlayStation Now work, like, and that stuff already exists.
Right, and it has existed for a while. So like when he's talking about 10 years ago, Dennis was talking about like prophesizing that, hey, this is also going to be the way that video games
work. At that time, like things like OnLive were coming out, Gaikai, which Sony would buy and turn into PlayStation Now. Those were just coming out. But the way that those worked is different than Stadia, in that the way OnLive worked, which I don't even know if it's still a service, but that thing actually launched and it was available and you could give it money and do things. But you would have whatever computer you had, and then you would like call into like a nice computer basically, and then have them play the game, and then it streams back to your shitty computer.
And that's how all VDI works. And so And so that and the others that you mentioned, when they were coming out in the gaming industry, this technology has existed on the business side, like with Windows and,
yeah.
and you know, people sitting at cubicles, actually for quite some time in some early forms. And the technology is just getting better and better, but it mostly comes down to internet speeds and latency. Latency, that's obviously the huge one. Is the yeah. big one. So we'll see. I mean, you know, it's going to... The entire infrastructure has to continually upgrade to the point where, like, you'll get 1080p. And the other problem is you have TV technology and resolutions developing faster than internet infrastructure.
Oh, the TV stuff has... ever since the launch of HD, like the real big rollout, which was, like, 2009, because that's when the FCC, like, flipped over and did digital signals.
Right.
The content providers, so movie studios, TV studios, stuff like that, they just can't keep up with like how many of these TVs are sold. So even now you can go buy a fucking 4K TV now for cheap, like $300. You get yourself a 4K TV. Well, have fun watching something on it, like,
yeah,
because it's not there. Like you can go buy like mainstream movies on like 4K Blu-rays or play like Xboxes and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, like, you know, just because the TV technology is further ahead than the content stuff, like there's always going to be this element of catching up. And that's another thing that people, you know, in the industry need to figure out. So in closing, Ray, we got on this fucking really existential birdwalk on like the future of video games, which is funny to circle all the way back to the 3DO, which in 1993, again, Time Magazine's product of the year. That was absolutely the fucking future of video games.
So I'm just going to lay it out right now. It's kind of like, you know, before Christianity had paganism and it was all these different gods.
Right. Polytheistic pantheons and whatnot.
Yes. And, you know, and then some guy would roll into town prophesizing the one true God.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, nah, you're crazy. One God, never going to happen.
Right.
What are you talking about? But then it just sneaks up and it creeps up. And before you know it, it's taken over everything.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone will look back at the 3DO as like the, I don't know, some apostle.
No,
Paul. He'll be the Paul.
You mean to say that the 3DO is exactly like Jesus Christ, Jesus Horatio Christ?
Yes.
That's the analogy you're trying to make right now.
Yeah, Google and PlayStation Now are the apostles yeah. for the Jesus Christ 3DO.
Absolutely. So yeah, is there any, I mean, for me, the final stuff of 3DO is like, I think it was an interesting thing. It was an industry shifting thing in terms of like what a home console is going to be graphically capable of. But ultimately, looking back on it, it is, you got to say it was a bit of a swing and a miss, just because take away all this other forward thinking, like one platform, like anyone can play ball with this type of license, idea, concept, whatever you want to call it. At the end of the day, a system is nothing without its games. And when you look at the 3DO library as a whole, like it's, you know, we got some stinkers in there, guy. We got a few stinkers.
And it was just priced out. It was just way over.
Just like the PS3, when it launched at $600, like they were not selling. That's a lot of fucking money. And we should have done this before we started, but if you adjust $700 1993 money to 2019, it's got to be like fucking like...
Oh, yeah, it's probably like $1,500.
$70 million or something like that. It's just fucking insane.
It's $30
million. Yeah.
I just easily calculated $30 right now.
$700 in 1993 money for a video game console. That's unheard of. It didn't work. It'll never work. And it's to the point now where, you know, like these new systems that are coming out that we talked about, like they're going to have to be like $400. Like Microsoft got their asses kicked trying to release a $500 system.
Yeah.
Like just based on consumer habits. Now we know definitively because they keep fucking trying. Like if you have a video game system that's $500 and up, it doesn't sell. Even the Xbox One X.
It's just not going to work.
Xbox One X is now almost routinely $350, and it launched at $500. And that's like literally the bleeding edge, top of the line system that you can get right now. And it's not that old. So sorry, 3DO. We maybe should have scaled on back and released something that wasn't $700. And then maybe it would have lasted like another 6 weeks or something. So anything for you, guy? Are you done?
I can't top the Jesus reference.
Nope, you're right. And with Jesus... Game over, yeah!